against the bulkheads. They posted guards with automatic weapons along the rails of the upper deck. There had been no guards on the day of the attack. There had been no way. They had stabilized the ship structurally. They had washed away the blood and gore that had splattered against the bulkheads. They posted guards with automatic weapons along the rails of the upper deck. There had been no guards on the day of the attack. There had been no warning, no specific intelligence. There had been no clear and sufficient rules of engagement for an approach by a skiff manned by two apparently unarmed locals. For the U.S. Navy, such an attack had seemed not just unlikely, but impossible. The enemy understood asymmetric warfare. We did not. As I stood in the blown-out guts of the USS Cole, I surmised that such a blatant act of war would compel us to respond with appropriate force. The U.S. government had failed to respond in any meaningful way to the previous AQ attacks, such as the bombings of our embassies in Kenya and Tanzania 2 years earlier. President Clinton's order to launch a few cruise missiles into Afghanistan and Sudan had negligible impact. If anything, that feeble response emboldened the enemy. What about those many other AQ operations thwarted by the United States and our allies? The enemy's intentions had been clear. They were now even clearer. Certainly the intelligence budget grew, and the president authorized some limited covert action measures. But the U.S. government seemed weak and befuddled at the policy level. Our leaders did not know what to do. I thought it was war. George Tenet had declared it such with a memo in 1998. This time it would be different, I thought. The United States would counterattack. We would now pursue AQ into their safe haven, Afghanistan. Later that evening, back at the temporary CIA command post in Aden, I drafted a cable to CIA HQS. As a senior officer, I had a responsibility beyond the intelligence support to the Department of State, the FBI, and the U.S. military, so I wrote directly to Pavitt and Kofor about the policy consequences of this terrorist act. It was war. The government had no choice but to pursue the enemy. The CIA must prepare to support the president and the military as we counterattacked. I could not have been more wrong. We did nothing except indict a handful of AQ operatives. AQ in Afghanistan remained unscathed, untouched. The Bush Administration. In January 2001, the Bush administration took office and focused on nation-state threats, practicing what seemed more like Cold War-style diplomacy instead of engaging non-state actors like Al-Qaeda. They placed emphasis on missile defense and other prestigious defense systems rather than gritty counterterrorism. From an operator's perspective, I could tell little difference from the Clinton administration. If there was a difference, however, the new White House team appeared to have even less interest in AQ. Officials declared they would revise our strategy against AQ, but it seemed to take lower priority than many other issues. I was never asked about what the new strategy should be. The only specific White House query about Al-Qaeda that I can recall concerned an alliance between AQ and Iraq. A CTC analyst mentioned it to me in the spring of 2001. The office of the vice president wants to know about the alliance between UBL and Saddam Hussein, she said. What alliance? I asked. The vice president asked about the alliance between AQ and Iraq. Are they cooperating, and if so, how? That's the dumbest fucking question I've heard all week.
Do you want me to tell the vice president that?
Probably not. That summer, after 3 years of counterterrorism work, first at the FBI and then at CTC, weary of Washington politics and eager for field operations, I accepted an overseas assignment as chief of one of the best CIA stations in the world. Greg grabbed a job in South Asia. Kofor, Ben, and Rich stayed at CTC. Chapter 9. Afghanistan. Strategy. In all fighting, the direct method may be used for joining battle, but indirect methods will be needed in order to secure victory. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. Translation, Lionel Giles. The new assignment was even better than I had hoped, in terms of both work and family. We had just moved from a temporary apartment into our new home. Only a couple of blocks from our son's school, the house was nearly perfect, with a large open floor plan and plenty of light. The beautiful garden wrapped around the small pool. The spacious, modern kitchen could easily accommodate our sons and their new friends, who had quickly discovered the convenience of nearby food and lovable Labradors. We had collected our two labs from the kennel after they had served their mandatory quarantine. 6 years earlier, I had paid an African farmer $25 for each. Since that purchase, we had spent several thousand dollars for their airfare, transporting them all over the world. It was worth every cent. Our boys loved them intensely. Our household effects had arrived 2 days earlier. Boxes, some only half unpacked, were scattered around the house. Our vehicles would arrive the next week. We were settling in for a 4-year tour. I was asleep when my brother-in-law called from New York City. "Turn on the TV," he ordered. "Yeah, okay. Are you all right?" I asked, as I fumbled for the remote control. Cindy sat up next to me. "Not sure. It looks bad. You have it?" he asked. "Yeah, I'll call you later."
"What is it?" Cindy asked.
"Your brother called. Look." I gestured to the TV. We watched the smoke pour out of the hole in one tower of the World Trade Center. We were sitting on the edge of the bed now, a few feet away from the screen. A few seconds later, the second plane hit.
"Oh, no, no," she said.
"Al-Qaeda," I responded. We watched, transfixed. Not so many, but very long minutes later, we saw the towers collapse. I tried to calculate the number of people in the buildings, how many were dead. I wondered about my friend John O'Neill, the recently retired FBI associate director in charge of New York, who had started working as chief of security for the Port Authority's Twin Towers. I would later learn that he directed the evacuation and rushed back into the building to save more, only to die as the structure collapsed. The TV continued to broadcast fragmented news reports of the Pentagon attack and the hijacked airliner that crashed into the Pennsylvania countryside. How did AQ execute this operation? When and where would their next attack be? Like me, my wife, a veteran of many overseas tours and many uncertainties, understood that this was vastly different. The entire risk landscape had convulsed, with breathtaking consequences rippling across the globe. This was no single quake, but rather a shift of geopolitical tectonic plates. Cindy asked, "What will we do?" For years, the CIA's strategic warnings had gone unheeded by our policy masters. Now the U.S. government had no choice but to respond. The epicenter for AQ was obvious. I answered, "We are going to Afghanistan." I got dressed and checked on the children, sleeping soundly. The dog stirred. I gently scratched their heads and they hunkered back down into their big pillow beds. I drove to the station and started reading the stream of reporting. It started as a trickle, but within a couple of hours it was a torrent of all-source reporting. CTC had tasked every CIA station. We were pushing requirements to our liaison partners, who had activated their networks. Not knowing where the next attack would come, not knowing who had the missing parts of this horrific plot, it was a global scramble for intelligence. The next morning, the new U.S. ambassador, who had arrived at post only a few days after me, came to my office. "Who is behind this?" he asked. Al-Qaeda. Bin Laden wants to incite U.S. retaliation against Muslims. He wants to ensnare us. He wants to draw us into this war against Muslim regimes that he views as corrupt, and many are. He wants to establish and rule a transnational Islamic caliphate that stretches from Morocco to Indonesia and maybe beyond. How does attacking us help him reach that goal? He asked. There was a debate among Al-Qaeda and their affiliates, particularly Egyptian Islamic Jihad, EIG, about attacking the near enemy, corrupt and ineffective Muslim regimes, or attacking the far enemy, the West and U.S. in particular, as a means to generate greater violence, greater traction by provoking us. He wants the U.S. waging war in Muslim lands, so the Ummah, the Muslim masses, will view us as invaders allied with corrupt Muslim regimes. This, UBL believes, will rally Muslim people to him, so he has greater popular support.